Hello everyone and welcome to today's Charity Digital podcast. I'm very excited to welcome you to another episode, whether it's your first time listening to us or you have heard our voices many times before. My name is Kiara Simmons-Wood and I'm joined today by Charity Digital's esteemed content team, namely Johan Mark Jones, Laura Stanley and Josie Sparling, to discuss working life in the charity sector and why it might just be the best place for you. Now on to today's conversation. There are lots of theories about life working in the charity sector. We've heard that it provides huge job satisfaction, that it is bureaucratic and frustrating, that it pays badly or well, that the benefits are few or many. Surveys suggest a sense of fulfillment, but also point to an unhealthy work culture, high expectations to go above and beyond, and a poor work-life balance. So we thought we'd clear the air. In this podcast, we use our knowledge from working with people across the sector, our experience from working in a charity, information collected from surveys and reports, and additional research to explore what it's really like to work in the charity sector. So let's start with the positive aspects. From personal experience and knowledge about the sector, can you tell me some of the benefits of working in the charity sector?
So I think the big one and the most obvious one is the sense of purpose and fulfillment. Because I think particularly after COVID and the pandemic, I think a lot of people are reevaluating their job roles and wanting to make sure that they doing something that helps people and that reaches a goal and just generally has purpose to their work. I have some stats ready for this. Just off the top of my head, no. There was a survey by Deloitte in which they found that purpose was particularly important to Gen Z and millennial candidates. They found that over a third, 37% of 16 to 44-year-olds considered an organisation's purpose before they applied for a job. It also influenced over a fifth of respondents when it came to deciding between job offers. So if something has less purpose, they're just not going to go for it. Also, it improves job satisfaction, doesn't it? No one wants to feel like, not to be like deep, but Sisyphus, like pushing that rock up the top of the hill for nothing. Like people.
I'm sure that's quite as deep.
I'm really deep. Sorry, guys. But yeah, so, I get a sense of purpose from this podcast, clearly. I think it's 84% of people said it's important to work for an employer that provides meaningful work, and the charity sector certainly does that, I think. So, yeah, that's my big one. Anyone else?
Yeah, so I would agree that the charity sector is very purpose and values driven, and the Charity Comms Salary and Organisational Culture Survey of 2022 said that 67% of charity sector respondents said they were happy in their role, 72% feel overall positively about their work-life balance, and 85% feel able to talk about their well-being at work, either formally or informally. I also think it's a really good opportunity to use your skills and also feel that you're doing something valuable for the world at the same time. That I guess we spend so much time at work, and it is good to feel that you're doing something that's worthwhile while you're working. I think it also depends a lot on the type of organisation you're working at, but say at a small charity you can put on lots of different hats, which is really valuable. Also it's a really lovely environment, like very supportive and friendly, as far as my experience has been. The other thing is about working from home, which can be a good or bad thing depending on what you prefer. But I think 30% of the voluntary sector works from home or does hybrid working. Some people think that's bad because they miss social aspects, but some people prefer it. So that could be another positive.
Sorry, I took a sip of water at the wrong time. One thing to mention to start, I think, is that the makeup of charities generally, like a lot of them are run entirely by volunteers. That's because a lot of charities aren't just small charities, they're micro charities. You know, essentially you've got someone who wants to set up something to address a local cause and they run it almost entirely by themselves and, you know, using their one laptop sort of thing and maybe a few volunteers from the area. And so for those people working, it is trying on a lot of different hats. It is this obvious sense of fulfillment, but doing a very purposeful thing and often for very low pay or no pay and so on and so forth. I think in terms of the fulfillment element, I think we'll get onto how there are some downsides to that too, because this sense of your purpose
can undermine elements of work because you are almost seen to go above and beyond for the sense of providing to your service users. But I think that will come into more the negative elements of working for a charity. I think another benefit of the charity sector generally is job stability, because I don't think charities are as at the whim of markets, as it were. So, you know, they're less likely and inherently less likely to take risks. They're quite risk averse because they want to, you know, essentially sustain a stability for their service users, which actually means that working at a charity is typically quite a stable job. Whereas, you know, they're not going to overhaul their entire organisation for the sort of pursuit of profit, as it were. And I think they also face worse reputational damage. Charities have to uphold an ethical standard. And what that means a lot of the time is that, you know, they're more concerned about how they look. So they're not going to, again, you know, hopefully not going to get rid of all their staff or treat people poorly. They're quite aware of how they are perceived within the sector and beyond. Lack of shareholders and ability to remove from market forces, I think, makes culture a little bit more enjoyable, or can do. So that could lead to less red tape, less bureaucracy, because you're not at the whim of stakeholders, shareholders, and everyone else who has a stake within, you know, your organisation. So in theory, that should lead to more agility, but that's not really what we hear from the sector. I think the sector actually talks a little bit about red tape becoming a complaint, that there's actually a lot of... you know, kind of bureaucracy within the sector, but in theory that shouldn't be the case. And I think, just to round it off before we move into some of the drawbacks, I think the most important thing, as mentioned earlier, is that sense of fulfillment, but it's helping service users. The one thing that's lovely about working in the charity sector, and this is a job and previous jobs, is that you go into work and you know that you're going to have an impact on the world. And I particularly like it here in the sense that we actually can drive change in the way that we have a little bit of freedom to do that. The Climate Action Campaign, which we reference in almost every podcast, so you might be bored of that by now, is something that we kind of decided to move with, and we're given license to do that. There's no ulterior motive. There's no profit momentum behind that. We decided that was something we wanted to do, and we've run with it, and we think it's super impactful for the sector. So that sense of driving change and impact, I think, is the defining thing that makes working here a lot nicer.
Thank you. I particularly liked the mention of like the flexibility that we get within our job role. So for instance, I typically work in marketing, but then being able to host this podcast today and work like closer with the content team is always fun. But now that we've discussed the positives, unfortunately we do also need to look into the problems that you've encountered in working in the charity sector.
I can start. That sounds like I'm too eager to start.
unveils a scroll.
I think we'll start with pay, because pay is, and people can touch on this. A study carried out by Pro Bono Economics found the charity sector employees were collectively paid an estimated $1.5 billion less than their counterparts in other sectors in 2019, and that continues to the present day. The Bank of England data recently showed the cost of living crisis is causing a continuing pay gap. So that means average wages rising in the year May 2022 by approximately 3.8% among charities compared to 5.6% for profit-driven organisations. So what that means is there is a gap between what charities and non-charities earn. It's a pretty common thing that's talked about in the sector as well. This shouldn't really surprise anyone, but I think pay is worse in the charity sector. That doesn't mean all charities pay is worse, it just means that overall. And a lot of that can be also attributed to smaller micro charities who are just unable, they do not have the resources to pay. So working in bigger charities, there's certainly room for that. So it should be kind of caveated. I think the other one that I think we'll all touch on is sort of burnout culture. And I think one thing we mentioned earlier is that sense of fulfillment, that sense of helping service users. There is a drawback to that in that charities almost have this, and I'm not specifically referencing any charity, this is something that Pro Bono Economics and Nottingham Trent University did a report about the exodus within the charity sector because of the pressures of the job. And I think that's kind of a key theme that we read about in these reports, is that people are expected to go above and beyond because of service users and because of the nature of the charity job, i.e. you're helping people, you're providing impact. And that in itself is seen as an incentive to drive you forward, whereas in a profit-driven organisation, at the end of the day, you know, if you've hit a target, you leave, or, you know, not even that, you are set to do a particular job and you're not serving anyone but you know, a stakeholder or a shareholder. And to be honest, I'm not too fussed if my shareholder gets an extra couple of quid and I have to work harder for it. But I think that is used almost for, it's not guilt so much as that there is like an almost underlying awareness that if you should go above and beyond sometimes because you're trying to hit service users, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There's also an element of we've gone from crisis to crisis, haven't we? So it's been the pandemic and responding to everything that, and you know, I think it was a third of charities had to cancel their services because they didn't have the skills or technology to deliver them. And yeah, I just think there's been a lot of having to double like down and batten down the hatches, as it were. And then we've got the cost of living crisis now, which is affecting both, you know, charity employees and the sector. So they're experiencing rising demand alongside perhaps struggling themselves. Mm. And like the stakes are just really high in the charity sector, because as Johan says, like that's, you're working to fulfill a mission at the end of the day. So yeah, I just think that that's going to contribute to burnout. And if you're feeling ultra responsible for that area, yes, it can be quite difficult. Yeah, apparently in February 2022, over 8 out of 10 voluntary and community sector leaders were concerned about staff burnout, according to the People's Health Trust. So yeah, it's a big problem in the sector. And I think it has been, well, I don't want to be like since I joined, but as in one of the first articles I ever wrote for Charity Digital was how the charity sector is dealing with burnout, because that was when we were in the midst of constant Zooms and it was lockdown and horrible. But I don't think we ever really left that crisis mode. Mm. So I think that, you know, after a while, that's hard. Yeah. You know, I mean,
couple that with bad pay is not bad pay, but like,
yeah.
And then particularly when you look at the cost of living crisis, I mean, you are talking about a crisis that will be an economic crisis that is impacting individuals because they're no longer able to afford that. So you're going into work having a far more stressful day and you're still not making enough to feed yourself or pay your bills. I mean, that's probably an extreme example, but it's obviously a real example. And particularly worth noting that, you know, we're talking from a content team that sits behind a desk, and not that our jobs are easy, but compared to a lot of people in the sector, they are. I mean, people work in hospices or carers and all these people. Mm. These are people who work in the charity sector, have exceptionally difficult jobs that are really demanding emotion. Mm-hmm. They then get paid badly and have to suffer, you know, the cost of living crisis economically as well. That is a really tough thing to do. And it's kind of no surprise that burnout is this constant issue to talk about.
Yeah. So Charity Comms, again, I'll reference them, said that 62% of people were working beyond their contracted hours due to stretched resources. So that comes, that's all about the well-being and time and money pressures that charities are facing. Yeah, and just to reference some other issues that people face in the charity sector, there are diversity, equality and inclusion issues. The NCVO Almanac 2022 found that 90% of the voluntary sector workforce is white. And the 2021 Charity Skills Report found that 57% of charities were looking at getting better representation among decision makers. And also there can be well-being and cultural issues, just like any other kind of organisation, such as poor communication and like things like bullying even. It's not that it doesn't happen in the charity sector just because it's values driven. Sometimes values don't always translate. And that's also seen in the diversity statistics as well, that sometimes it just doesn't, I can't think of the words. Sometimes charities have challenges like that. Sometimes just some more lighthearted things. In a bigger charity, you might feel that you want to join because you care about the purpose and the cause of the charity, but you might not actually be doing anything relating to the cause. You might not feel as fulfilled as you might expect in a charity.
I think sometimes, I think those values that Josie mentioned, I think sometimes they can be inverted almost and made into, they sort of excuse certain behaviours in the sector. So, for example, because you're helping service users, for example, supporting people, people living on the streets or something like that, you almost say, oh, okay, we're not hitting these targets, or we're not communicating properly, or we have to push harder, and they have elements of bullying, but you're trying to achieve these goals, and they're seen as this end goal that it's sort of like the ends justify the means, right? Even if the means are, you know, for example, not as perfect as they should be, or the communication's lacking, or there's bullying involved. It's like we have to push forward and we have to do this. And so I think that that is a slight cultural problem in the sector, and we see it quite a lot. It feeds into burnout. It feeds into all these other problems. It feeds into recruitment. It feeds into job enjoyment, work-life balance, all these things. And so much of it, even diversity, inclusion, all those things, it's almost excusable in a sense, because the overall mission seems to trump these other things. And I just don't, I think that's a problem that they need to address, charities. I think the other thing as well is, just because you are helping people in the end doesn't mean that you need to look after your own people. They're equally as, I don't think it's a comparable thing, to be honest, that they're not equally as important, but everyone you're supporting is your community, and they, including your workers, and you need to support them too, if that makes sense.
Bullying is a scandal no one wants to suffer, reason, like, it is, and it will come out as a scandal if it finds, like, especially as Johan said at the start, like, if you have a scandal as a charity, it's perceived as so much worse than in the corporate sector, I think, because charities are meant to, they're scrutinized at a higher level by the public. Like, people want to trust that the charities they're investing in, because a donation is sort of an investment, are going to behave responsibly. So I feel like bullying, as well as it being the wrong thing to do, like, don't get me wrong, like, don't just do it wrong, like, it's the wrong thing to do, not just because it's a scandal, but yeah, it's not going to look great anyway. Sorry, go on, Kiara.
Thank you, Laura. So yeah, following on from the discussion of supporting your own employees and the problems we've just discussed, like, ranging from burnout to the lack of competitive salaries to the difficulty in aligning all employees' values and behaviours, how do you think that charities can improve working life for their employees?
I think time and money pressure for charities is kind of just the reality of working in the charity sector in 2023. But there are is support available from within the sector for other charities, for example, Charity Digital. So we provide registered charities with donated and discounted technology, and help charities automate campaigns through .digital email marketing. So there are things that Charity Digital does that can help save other charities time and money. There are also charities such as Pilot Light, who provide free programs which help charity professionals apply and grow their skills from business experts, and can also help with strategy and planning. Digital Candle can connect charity professionals with technology experts for free advice and guidance. And In-Kind Direct distribute customer products donated by companies to charitable organisations, which can save them money so they can spend their money elsewhere. So yeah, just make the most of the support that's available within the charity sector to maximise your time and money.
That's a really good one. I mean, I would say that, but yeah, it was like, that's a really good point. I think they could look at the development and progression opportunities that they offer, and just over communicate, I think, really, because I think that, well, we were talking about the values earlier and everything, and I think if charities over communicate those values, that are going to be in the background of every employee's mind, that becomes a part of that shared mission, and it becomes part of their shared goals, and that will only add to, like, the collaboration and everything within the sector and within the charity itself. But yeah, back to development and progression opportunities, I think that will add to another sort of strand of fulfillment. And I think that it's a big barrier for people entering the charity sector, because I think people think, oh, well, here's the three clear ways I can get up the corporate ladder, but there's not really that evidence in the charity sector. And when your salaries are limited and resources are limited, sometimes you want to know where you're going to go. So there was a findings from a 2022 EY Foundation report, which surveyed young people from low-income houses, and 35% said they wanted a better understanding of the job opportunities available. 24% identified the need for clear progression routes. 23% want a better understanding of where to search and apply for vacancies. And that's part of the diversity problem we were mentioning earlier. If you're not making it obvious where these opportunities lie and what you can actually get from working in the charity sector, then you are going to end up with an echo chamber, which is where we're at the minute. Also, 51% said they wanted improved pay, benefits and flexibility. And I do feel like that's everyone. I can't believe 49% don't. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think a general point builds on both the benefits. I mentioned job stability earlier. Charities are less likely to take risks. They're risk averse. They all tend to be risk averse. But at the same time, I think that can lead to a sense of conservatism in the sector, i.e. organisational conservatism.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful, but I think like they basically don't experiment a lot with working patterns and stuff like that. Flexibility is something they've embraced a lot more. So have most people, though I don't think that's a specific thing within the charity sector, though. I think they are kinder in terms of stuff like childcare and stuff like that broadly. But I think in terms of, you know, you look at stuff that we're talking about almost every day on the BBC News. You see some new trial on the 6-day, 6-hour workday, or 4-day week, or you know, all these various things. And I think there could be a level of experimentalism within the charity sector in terms of how they can reach these new organisational patterns. And I mean, just taking flexibility to the next level. And the charity sector seems to be the place where you really could do that, because the demands are different from a lot of commercial demands, I think. Sorry, Paul.
No, sorry to interrupt your flow. But I was just going to say that I think that is a really interesting point, because I think charities, I think the temptation very often is to think that corporates, that we can learn a lot from them, and obviously we can. They have more resources. They do tend to push the envelope a little bit more, I think, in certain ways. And yeah, obviously there's a lot we can learn from them in an organisation way, but it's not the only way. Mm. And it doesn't mean that the charity sector shouldn't push its own envelope, I think. And it is a different sector to the corporate one. And I think sometimes we're at risk of going too corporate.
Ooh, that's a Lawrence bombshell. Can we play a sound effect? Anyway,
at risk.
I think that that's a really good point, and I just feel like the lack of innovation in the sector, which you alluded to there, I think is really important, because the sector almost has a bit more freedom to do that without the repercussions in some sense. In other ways, not, because the repercussions are non-commercial, i.e. for example, not meeting service user needs, which is the thing that holds us back. It's a really hard balance, because on the one hand, you don't want to innovate and take a risk because the people who might suffer your service
issues. Yeah.
But on the other hand, the risk is what might provide better you know, funds or better support for your service users. So the point I'm saying is maybe just being a bit more flexible in terms of how you can experiment with working life to get the most out of productivity. I mean, the thing we find with these 6-hour days, these 4-day work weeks, overwhelmingly, and this is what annoys me a little bit about it, is we see overwhelmingly that it boosts productivity.
Yeah.
That it sort of has great impact, sort of overwhelmingly positive impacts on mental well-being and mental health. And you sort of go, okay, that sounds good. And then everyone goes, and next month we'll do another one. And next year, we've been doing them for about 50 years now. They did them in the 70s. In Sweden, there was the 6-hour work week. It's a book called Utopia for Realists. You can read it yourself. It has this whole, you know, like a history of these experiments in different countries across the world, and overwhelmingly positive results. And so the charity sector could be a bit more on that. And again, the focus, I think, should be on productivity, not hours. There's one thing that I want to say, which I'm not too sure how to put in any really nice way. And that's that I think the charity sector might be a little too nice at times, i.e. I've been to a lot of these meetups where, you know, everyone's kind of, we talk a lot hypothetically about what the charity sector should be like, or the makeup, or how to push forward. And sometimes I think there's quite a lot of focus on these meetings rather than actually cracking on with the work. And so I would say a lot of focus should maybe be on productivity rather than hours.
I agree that you should focus on productivity over hours, because that was the biggest thing when you were working from home, right? People were like, oh, they're not going to be, employees are not going to be working. But actually, people were more productive because they were so worried that people wouldn't think they were working, and their hours were more compressed. So like, you instead of having that like one Friday where you're like, oh, I'm exhausted, you're getting things done like really quickly and everything. But yeah, so not that that's me, but I just mean as in like general, like productivity, but almost switching off was the problem when working from home, because people didn't have that boundary between their living rooms and their offices anymore. So yeah, I think you're right. I think productivity should, like, if you're getting the work done, that should be focused on whether how many hours you're working. I do think it's very important for the charity. I mean, I don't think you were not saying this, so maybe I'm disagreeing for no reason. But I do think the charity, why? Sean Connery, can you stop coming in, please? I do think that it's important for the charity sector to share.
Oh,
and in a way that corporates don't.
I definitely think cooperation and collaboration is key. I just mean that there's a sense of, like, internally was more of my point.
Oh, okay.
I think internally, and this was reflected in some of the reports that there's a focus on, it's not being nice to staff. It's a meeting heavy culture is what I'm saying.
Is it too much abstract thinking and not enough concrete thinking?
Yeah, I think so.
That's valid.
Let's make sure everyone's heard, because obviously it's a good thing. But I think it's a bit linked in positive toxic positivity sometimes to say that everyone should be heard, you know, across an entire organisation, when actually sometimes it's best to let the people with the expertise crack on with their jobs. I know that's unpopular these days, and I'm not trying to make like a really point, but I just mean that we're the content team, for example. We drive content forward, and to be honest, in this organisation, we had to overcome that a little bit, where it was like, no, I need the autonomy. No, we know what we're doing, you know, and we sort of took more and more of the reins. And that's a positive thing, because now the people who are the experts who have done this for years, who have been writing and studied this stuff, we can then crack on and do it. And rather than having to constantly ask everyone for permission to crack on with work. I think that's what I'm saying, is that trust your employees, trust the experts within your field, and allow better autonomy. And I think that's something in the charity sector that they're too concerned with, this constant sense of permission. And I mean this as an individual, on the lower rings of the rungs of the...
the lowest rungs.
It's not rings.
The rings of the rungs.
Content team, which are the experts. On the rings of the ladder. But yeah, like lower down is you. I feel in the sector there's a lot of asking for permission, and this was reflected in a lot of the surveys, where people didn't have the sort of autonomy they wanted to ask and given the permission to go ahead. And I think in the commercial sector, because again it's profit-driven, profit maximisation ethos, they kind of like expect you to crack on, get your work done and earn that money for them. And that's probably a more productive way to work. So focus on productivity, I think, is key, and allowing people to just make the most of their skills and trust that they'll do a good job.
I feel like you can review later as well, because I feel like that's the problem, because again, back to the reputation and high level of scrutiny, like if something goes out there that's potentially reputationally damaging, then you probably need to go through more people at the charity. But that, like, I think it's a ask for forgiveness, not permission, sort of thing, internally, not externally.
Yeah, I think that at our most recent conference in March, we actually heard a lot from charity sector leads saying that these are the years, especially when we're going through, like, we've just come out of the COVID-19 pandemic and going through the cost of living crisis, that we just need to be flexible and experiment. And I think that that's, like, quite a lot of what charities are doing at the moment, is just experimenting. And as you said, Laura, like, ask for forgiveness later, as long as it's not an extremely extreme decision to take. You could, actually reap the benefits of experimenting a little bit more.
I think also there's a sense of leaders being in a position to lead by example. Other thing is, like, a lot, there's a fetishization of hard work in the sector a little bit, I think, where some people just, they kind of think that that's by staying late, by pushing extra hard and so on and so forth. Like, I worked till 10 o'clock last night, you know, that's then set as an expectation across the organisation. Mm. I think that's a really damaging thing that anyone in any position of power should stop doing almost immediately. like primarily because ultimately you again justify it by, like, we have to help our service users and we have to do this. And then suddenly everyone's like, oh, but they really care. And it's like this almost, again, guilt tripping. So if you are a leader and you have anyone in your team, you should always leave on time, take your lunch breaks, don't email at weird times. Don't send any Teams messages outside hours. It's not just leaders, to be honest. I don't think anyone in an organization should do it, because you're setting precedents for other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
other people start to worry.
Yeah, I tend to do it. I mean, even in the content team, I mean, Laura once messaged me at the 9 p.m. and I was...
Look, you.
No, but I mean, I was... It's for... You check in, because that's what you should do. You should check in and be like, okay, is everything okay? Why are you working at 9 p.m.? And that's what everyone should be doing, really. And I'm not talking about bosses and their employees or anything. I'm talking about even like if anyone across the organization has no relation to me in terms of like my department or a department messages me at seven, I'm going to ask them why they're messaging me at seven. Because I think culturally you set a standard there where everyone just knows at 5:30 they can check out. You know, you can work late from time to time if it demands it. At conference, for example, we all work a few extra hours and it's, you dig in, you know, and that's fine. But if you set a standard, I wouldn't work for somewhere where I have to work till 7 o'clock. I just won't work there. I will quit.
I think younger generations particularly will not do that either. Like, I think it's an older generation thing. Like, I think it's something that's come down, again, from like a corporate way of work, like thinking. And I don't think Gen Zs are going to stand for that anymore. Like, you've seen like a much increased demand for work-life balance from younger generations. And I just think that, yeah, good luck recruiting if that's your culture.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I just remember my dad and my, this is too personal, but my dad, my granddad, they were always just like really over like the top with that, like work hard, it's the best thing. And it just got to a point where I was like, you can do that if you want, but there's television that needs to be watched. And stuff.
Like,
Line of Duty is really good. No, but like there is like loads to do. And also if you're working on yourself, your own projects, the things that provide you value, you're completely entitled to them. And don't let anyone take them away from you.
Also, eventually, you will get burnt out and then you won't be productive at all.
That's the key, not Line of Duty.
Both is good.
But yeah, I mean,
watch Line of Duty.
By this, don't get diminishing burnout. Returns, right? Like the whole point we've always said is by the time you get to 5 o'clock, this is so true for content teams as well, because when you start writing at 5 o'clock after a day of writing, do you think you're writing anything of any value? I've read Laura's work post 5 o'clock.
I was like, everything I write is of value. I am Shakespeare. What do you mean?
I think especially seeing as a lot of people in the charity sector, as we said earlier, like wear different hats, there is always more to do.
Exactly.
You do at one point need to log off because otherwise it will lead to burnout, which I think we discussed quite in depth earlier. Now, I'm afraid that that's all we have time for today. So are there any closing points that anyone would like to make?
Firstly, the hat comment. I just pictured loads of people wearing different hats. The problem with the charity sector is everyone wears weird hats.
Does anyone still wear a hat? That's a Sondheim reference.
Is it?
Yeah. Sorry.
A couple more things, I suppose, is feedback forms. Do employees see feedback forms? I think it's the biggest miss of a lot of charities if they still don't do this.
Just
to get check-in from your people, really. Ask them what they're feeling. I don't understand why you wouldn't take that. And I mean, we do it on Typeform, I think, or Google Forms. You know, it doesn't have to be this super complex thing. You don't have to outsource HR. I mean, you can obviously do that too. But just ask, send an email around on a Wednesday once a month and say, how's your workload? How's your mental health? You know, like, and so on, or whatever. You know, I'm not questions for you. So yeah, I think that's interesting. And perks is another one that I think is worth mentioning, because you should offer perks, but I find that some, particularly like startups in this world, offer perks that people don't really care about. Like, I don't really go to work to play ping pong, but like at the same time,
what?
It's just, I find some of the one thing I was reading about the other day is perk culture and these small but seemingly significant things that they're offering often to the loudest people in the room.
Yeah,
people want, oh, it'd be lovely if we had these, you know, work drinks. And some people just don't want to go to work drinks. So make sure or ping pong is another example that I've mentioned already. But like,
my hat comment weird.
No, I'm saying that, you know, these places offer ping pong. We've got a ping pong table, as if that's the reason I come to work. You know, I just mean that make sure that whatever perks you're offering are universally applied, and that people can all take advantage of them rather than just reaching out to the main people in the room.
Can I add, don't feel guilty for perks? Because I feel like that there's a little bit of, in the charity sector, every single penny must go to the mission. And obviously that is partially true. And I do believe that. But I hope there's as much focus on don't feel guilty for paying your employees. And don't, like, because I think remuneration costs that sometimes get scrutinized again heavily in the charity sector. But yeah, just do not feel guilty for paying your employees and giving them a perk, because again, they're doing your work.
Yeah.
It's important. So that's just as important as everything else. It is an actual cost. You know what I mean? It's a thing.
I think you should end this.
Thank you for your insights into what it is like to working in the charity sector and for exploring the good, the bad and the ugly. Our next podcast comes out in 2 weeks and will be on everyone's favourite topic, artificial intelligence. See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.